Before we get started with today's show, I want to tell you guys about betonline.ag. We are down to the Final Four. The conference finals are here. Indiana battling it out with Boston. Denver dueling with Dallas. BetOnline has you covered with all the odds, props, promos, and parlays during the conference finals. And if you use our promo code BLEAV, B-L-E-A-V, when you sign up with the link in the description of this episode, you can claim a 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. Bet online, where the game starts. Good morning, good evening, good afternoon, or good night, however and whenever it is you may be listening. Thank you for stopping on into another fantabulous episode of the Take It Easy podcast, live on the Bleav Podcast Network. Except it isn't live because it is, as always, a podcast. And podcasts aren't live. It's the whole purpose of this podcasting thing. You can listen however and whenever it is that you so choose. And we appreciate that you have decided to stop in however and whenever it is you may be listening. We are so glad you're joining us on this Memorial Day Monday, May 27th, according to my count. It may not be that according to your count, but we appreciate you stopping in however and whenever you may be listening. We have got a fun show planned for you today. The Eastern Conference Finals are all but a wrap. It's a 3-0 lead for the Boston Celtics. At the time of our recording, actually, the Dallas Mavericks are up 60-52 at halftime on the Minnesota Timberwolves, so technically both series could be 3-0 by the time you're listening to this, at which point we have our inevitable NBA Finals between the Dallas Mavericks and the Boston Celtics, both of which are series I find to be incredibly, incredibly interesting. But today we're going to focus on the Eastern Conference Finals, and then come back to the Western Conference Finals on Wednesday's episode of the show, which, by the way, the one thing I'll say about the West is that the Friday game two between Dallas and Minnesota, and I know that Wired Up is usually what we have to break down things that happen Friday and Saturday in the sports world, but the incredible, incredible basketball game that was game two of the Minnesota Timberwolves and Dallas Mavericks series ended with perfection. And by perfection, I mean Luka Doncic switching onto Rudy Gobert and hitting a step back three-pointer in his face and telling him, "You can't guard me, motherfucker," and then telling the Minnesota fans to go home. And I was making bring your ass memes, and people were making fun of Anthony Edwards for passing up the game-winning shot to Naz Reid on multiple occasions, and making fun of Karl Anthony Towns for benching the final 8.5 minutes of the game. And Karl Anthony Towns, by the way, 19 minutes, 5 points on 2 of 8 shooting from the field in the first half of the Timberwolves and Mavericks Game 3. So Karl Anthony Towns is getting shit from everywhere. Anthony Edwards is getting made fun of for passing up these last second shots. Just ultimately, it was a hater's delight, that Game 2, and it had just an epic conclusion with Luka hitting the step back shot. And I'll say this again, I've been wrong about the Dallas Mavericks. I'm going to do a whole breakdown of Dallas coming up on Wednesday, so we'll save some of the Dallas Mavericks thoughts. Just want to put out there just how awesome that game two was. It was, for us as a sports anarchist, and as much as we love the Minnesota Timber Pups, as a sports anarchist, boy did I love to watch that game two, because it was a total anarchy victory that the Dallas Mavericks pulled out of their ass. The other thing is it made a bunch of people lose money gambling-wise, because they brought up this stat on the broadcast that home teams playing in Game 2, that lost the first game of the series. I think it was like since 2016 or something like that. In the last 24 times that a home team loses game one of the series, in game twos, they are 21-3 with an average margin of victory of 17.5 points. And it looked like it was headed that way for Minnesota. People were betting on Minnesota to win. The Timberwolves were up double digits, and a perfect haters' delight ending to the game went Dallas's way, capped off by literally taking the lead with 3 seconds left in the game. It was a perfect haters' delight moment for the Dallas Mavericks to beat the Minnesota Timberwolves, and maybe the best game I've seen in the entire playoffs. Now, let's talk about Boston and Indiana. I want to start off with a brief eulogy about the Indiana Pacers real quick, because the Pacers, while they will go down in the same camp as the 2021 Hawks, in the sense that they probably were a year ahead of schedule and overachieved and got the beneficiaries of one of the bigger playoff upsets of the last few years. In the case of the Atlanta-Philadelphia series from 2021, that was the biggest playoff upset that we've seen in the last 10 to 15 years of NBA basketball. And it pretty much stunted the best chance the Sixers have had, really, to get to the conference finals. But what's interesting is that Indiana this year is going to kind of be in that same vein of the Atlanta Hawks. And what I mean by that is this. When Trae Young and the Hawks won that series against New York where Trae Young's hitting the bow to the crowd and everyone is booing him, and then they go on to play Philadelphia and they pull this miraculous series win out of their ass in one of the great upsets of all time. The Sixers blow multiple double-digit leads. Trae Young was a fourth-year guard who was an all-star on the fringes of all NBA, and Trae Young, singularly great player, was able to lead team to victory in a series that was not anticipated. Now, winning that first playoff series against the New York Knicks in 2021, not as much of a surprise. That was the natural progression for the Hawks. They won a first-round series, were supposed to lose in the second round, go out and trade for a DeJounte Murray or an all-star caliber player to pair alongside Trae Young, and then go from there. Ultimately, they made that move and never got better as a result of it, and a few years later, they've gone through 2 general managers and 3 head coaches since getting to the conference finals in 2021. They fired McMillan, they had an interim for a couple days, and now Quinn Snyder is the coach, and the team has no real prospects of ever getting back to the Eastern Conference Finals. For the Pacers, I will say this. Tyrese Haliburton is a singularly great player who does passing and running an up-tempo offense incredibly well. And the Pacers have run an up-tempo offense incredibly well. And even if it's a bullshit run to the conference finals, they don't have to apologize for a bullshit run to the conference finals. We said the same thing last week after Game 7 when we were talking about the Knicks and what the Pacers do incredibly well. The Pacers got to a conference finals by product of the ability to execute an up-tempo offense incredibly well that will get you 4 out of 7 victories in a series. And I think the Pacers are set up well to be one of these contenders in the Eastern Conference over the next few years, especially because it looks like Cleveland's about to blow this shit to the ground. Like, Donovan Mitchell's not going to sign an extension. Jared Allen is reportedly on the way out. Like, since it looks like Cleveland's about to blow this shit to the ground, since it looks like Miami might be fading from contention at this point with an aging Jimmy Butler, you know, Indiana's going to be one of these teams that's going to be competing for the next few years, and ultimately, if they have good injury luck, I think they can replicate some of the success. But I think back to the 2021 Hawks, and I think back to last year's Sacramento Kings as a model for the Indiana Pacers. And what I say is this: the Pacers put up one of the most historic offenses in the history of the NBA, second best offensive efficiency in the history of the NBA. They scored a ton of points, they defended nobody, and they were able to make a run to the conference finals. What does that remind me of the 2021 Atlanta Hawks with Trae Young? What does that remind me of the 2023 Light the Beam Sacramento Kings, who, if they had not shit the bed against the Golden State Warriors in the first round, probably would have beat the Lakers in round two and probably would have gone to the conference finals, where they would have been swept out by the Denver Nuggets, the eventual NBA champions, the same way that the Atlanta Hawks, even though they didn't get swept out of the playoffs, got beat in six games by the eventual NBA champion Milwaukee Bucks. So Indiana, who we said last week was probably the sixth or seventh best team in the playoffs and the team I least thought was likely to make a deep run through the Eastern Conference playoffs. Indiana gets to the conference finals. They're a year ahead of schedule. They've made the big trade for Pascal Siakam. They gave up three first-round picks in order to make it happen. None of them in the lottery, but they gave up three first-round picks to make such a trade happen. And they're banking on the natural development of Tyrese Halliburton. However, Tyrese Halliburton is now... let me just make sure I have the math correct here. Tyrese Halliburton is now 24 years old, going on 25. And that's about the age where you enter your physical prime as an NBA player. Now, granted, he's going to have more repetitions with this group of guys, but Tyrese Halliburton was an All-NBA player this year. He was an All-NBA guard this year. And the people that Tyrese Halliburton has to now jump in order to get into All-NBA first team MVP conversation, best player in the league status, is that he's now got to jump Luka, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, Anthony Edwards, who is younger than him, Jalen Brunson, and depending on how you feel about Devin Booker, also Devin Booker, because Booker was an All-NBA first teamer as well. All-NBA third team for Devin Booker. Yeah, because the third team was Steph Curry, Tyrese Halliburton, and Devin Booker. And then depending how you feel about Donovan Mitchell, but I think Donovan Mitchell is probably at the stage of the game where, like I said, Donovan Mitchell deserves the chance to just score a bunch of points and make a lot of money on a team that goes to the play-in. Like, Donovan Mitchell has earned that at this stage of his career. I look at Tyrese Halliburton, as great, as close to a modern Chris Paul as he is, and I don't know where the room for improvement will come in his game. Like, there's places that he can improve, but I don't know if there's going to be a meaningful enough improvement to get him over the names that we're talking about there. Because Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, who is 1 year older than Tyrese Halliburton, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander is a two-time All-NBA player. My math is correct, he is 20 months older than Tyrese Halliburton and is already a two-time All-NBA first-teamer. That would mean to reach the pace of Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, again, third in the MVP voting, fell to Luka Doncic in the first round of the playoff, it would require Tyrese Halliburton to make that leap next season over ascending players like Anthony Edwards and Shai Gilgeous-Alexander and, you know, Devin Booker, who's probably on the descent, so I wouldn't be surprised if he jumps Devin Booker in terms of MVP caliber player, but that's the standard that is being set by the guards at the top of the league. This is the same thing that Trae Young has constantly been bucking back against for his entire career. And granted, Trae Young is 3 years older than Tyrese Halliburton now, but Trae Young is similarly an undersized guard who does a couple of things at an elite level, but also has shortcomings in his game. I'm not saying Tyrese Halliburton is Trae Young. What I'm saying is, in order for Tyrese Halliburton to replicate the success next year and make it feel like the Pacers deserved to get to the conference finals instead of just benefiting from the Bucks getting hurt, benefiting from the Knicks getting hurt, and still even with those injuries going to six games with the Bucks and seven games with the Knicks and feeling like they overachieved and being validated in feeling like they overachieved when they get swept out of the playoffs by the Boston Celtics, even though they, I said at the beginning, you know exactly what's going to happen in this series. It's going to go five games. The Celtics are going to drop a stupid game in the middle, and it's going to be a five-game series win for Boston. And ultimately, the Pacers fucked up that one stupid game that Boston played, because in game one, the Celtics hit a game-tying three-pointer at the buzzer where they should have intentionally fouled up three. And so the Pacers even fucked up the one game that they could have gotten the series. And ultimately, Tyrese Halliburton got injured, obviously. But if Tyrese had, in the first three games of the series, who were the most valuable players on the floor? It was like, if you were picking the top six most valuable players on the floor, I think you'd pick four Boston Celtics and maybe two Pacers. You might even pick five Boston Celtics, but probably you would pick four and two Indiana Pacers. And that doesn't even include Porzingis, who's been out for Boston at this point. But what's so interesting for Indiana is that Trae Young is not, Tyrese Halliburton is not Trae Young, but I see the trajectory of the Pacers being of similar ilk to the Hawks. And that is, they're going to consistently make the playoffs. They're going to consistently be in these playoff series. But ultimately, I don't think Tyrese Halliburton is going to improve his game in such a dramatic way that we look at him in the same way as Luka and Anthony Edwards and Shai Gilgeous-Alexander. And the pushback to that is he plays in the Eastern Conference, and that is a fair foot pushback. Like, in order for them to get to the conference final, something that Shai Gilgeous-Alexander and the Thunder did not in their first playoff run together, it required that the Indiana Pacers go through the weaker conference to get there, and the conferences are not going to realign. So I understand that point as well. Then you toss in the Ja Morant returning for Memphis. You toss in the Zion Williamson and the Pelicans, and the Western Conference just gets deeper and deeper and deeper. Meanwhile, you look at the East, and it's like, well, Tyrese is maybe one of the four best players in the Eastern Conference right now, so that makes it easier for Tyrese to be able to make a run deep into the playoffs. And I get that point as well, too, but I feel like that's missing the point on, like, If the Thunder had gotten to the Eastern Conference Finals and played Boston, they probably would have lost, but they wouldn't have gotten smoked out the building like the Pacers have gotten smoked out the building in these series. And I know the Pacers were up by double digits in Game 3. I'm just going by proxy of result. The Pacers are going to get swept out of the Conference Finals, and that is going to be validation of the Pacers, you know, being an overachiever and benefiting from some injuries to the rest of the teams, which, by the way, every team in the Eastern Conference, apart from the Boston Celtics, and even the Boston Celtics because Porzingis got hurt, literally every team lost a key player in the Eastern Conference playoffs. Here, I'll go down the list here. Boston lost Kristaps Porzingis. New York Knicks lost Jalen Brunson, Josh Hart, and OG Anunoby to injuries at various points in their series. Bucks lost Dame Lillard and Giannis Antetokounmpo. Cleveland lost Donovan Mitchell, Caris LeVert, and Jared Allen. Pacers lost Tyrese Halliburton two games into the Eastern Conference Finals. Orlando, I don't know if Orlando lost anybody, but Orlando just lost. And then you have Philadelphia, Joel Embiid playing with torn meniscus, Bell's palsy, and migraine headaches. Miami Heat, Jimmy Butler goes down, and there's your entire Eastern Conference playoffs. Everyone lost a significant player along the path to the conference finals. The only thing that Indiana benefited from was their injury happening later than everyone else. Just because Indiana made a deeper run through the playoffs is a you know, you don't need me, a rocket, you don't need to be a rocket scientist or need to be me to tell you that the Thunder probably would beat the Pacers in a seven-game series, that the Nuggets would probably beat the Pacers in a seven-game series, probably do it in four or five. Like, we know what the Pacers were, so thinking about where they're going to go from this point forward, I'm really curious to see how Tyrese Halliburton improves his game, because I genuinely don't know and don't have the basketball acumen to pinpoint what Tyrese Halliburton does and say this is where he can make improvement to, for example, be as good as Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, or this is where he can make the improvements to be a Luka Doncic. I'm really curious to see what happens next for Tyrese, because this year was eye-revealing for a lot of people. This was the first year that the Pacers were really trying to compete in a win-now mode, and this was the kind of revelation of Tyrese Halliburton, especially with what the in-season tournament did for the Pacers. And I think that's the thing you could point to and say is the most interesting going forward, is that the in-season tournament got Tyrese Halliburton and the Pacers some airtime before they shined through in the playoffs and made a miraculous run of the Eastern Conference Finals. But the closest comparisons of team that scores a lot of points and doesn't play a lot of defense with a young 20-something-year-old point guard leading the way on offense, the closest examples in recent years are Trae Young in the Atlanta Hawks, De'Aaron Fox in the Sacramento Kings last year. And again, Sacramento blew it by losing to the Warriors, but they were a better team than the Warriors, and if they had won that series, they probably would have beat the Lakers in the second round to be the Indiana Pacers, right? This year's Indiana Pacers team was last year's Sacramento Kings team, like to a T. Number one offensive efficiency in the league, Sacramento was last year. Number two offensive efficiency rating is Indiana, but Indiana's offensive efficiency was even higher than Sacramento's last year. So the team was impeccably good, almost made a surprise run to the conference finals in the case of Indiana, almost made a surprise run to the conference finals in the case of Sacramento, made a surprise run to the conference finals in the case of the Hawks. And in 2022, the Hawks regressed to an 8 seed. In 2023, the Kings regressed to the 9 seed. Will Indiana be the next team that follows that pattern? I suspect that's going to be the case. And the only reason I suspect that is going to be the case is because I'm using that as a precedent instead of looking at ways I believe Tyrese Halliburton can project and improve his game. But even if Tyrese Halliburton gets better, he has to get better by leaps and bounds than the all-NBA guards that stand in front of him, three of which are in the same generation as him. Luka Doncic, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, and Anthony Edwards, and another couple, Jalen Brunson, Trae Young, De'Aaron Fox, Devin Booker, depending on how you feel about Devin Booker. Those people are kind of the same age, relatively speaking, but are a little bit older and trying to stay on top and will probably be healthier because Fox battled injuries this year and Trae Young battled injuries this year. And obviously Damian Lillard is still trying to get at this game. Devin Booker battled injuries this year, but still made all NBA at the end of the day. So like you look up and you like recognize who the best guards in the league are, one or two, like it doesn't have to be ball dominant guard, two guard, whatever you want to point to, the best guards in the league. Jockeying for the same position, the titles of the best in the league, best players on teams that can compete for a championship. Tyrese Halliburton is like chomping at the bit to get into that group, and he's right on the fringes. Because now I almost forgot, throw in the Ja Morant aspect of it all too, and you've got a group of all NBA guards of a certain generation that are all fighting for the same prizes, the same all-NBA teams, the same playoff spots, the same playoff positionings, most of them in the Western Conference. But if you want to gauge about who the best guards in the league are, look at those all-NBA teams, and you can kind of get a better gauge, and look at player efficiency ratings and win shares, and you can get a gauge of who the most valuable guards in the league are. And of this new generation that has just taken the league from the older guys, the Devin Bookers, the Donovan Mitchells, of this new generation of guards, Luka, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, Anthony Edwards, I'll even throw Jalen Brunson in the mix as a late bloomer, Trae Young, Tyrese Halliburton, De'Aaron Fox, even though De'Aaron Fox is a little bit older as well, Ja Morant, of this group of 9 to 10 guards all fighting for the same prizes in the sport, I don't know what the improvements are in the game that will make Tyrese Halliburton ascend from the middle of the pack and get into that Luka Doncic, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander group. And because I can't foresee those improvements, or at least improvements so significant that he will elevate himself to all-NBA first team status at age 25, because I don't see where that improvement is going to be, I project that Indiana will be of similar caliber next year, as they were to this year's team. Yes, they will get more repetitions together with Siakam and Halliburton, and they'll figure things out as they go along, and they'll get a healthy Benedict Mathurin, and maybe they'll bring in another player somewhere along the line. But I would project that the Pacers will follow a similar step back first round exit, maybe even play-in tournament, as the Sacramento Kings of this last year and of the Atlanta Hawks of 2021, and, you know, circumstances outstanding, but also the Memphis Grizzlies of this past season. I would suspect a similar letdown season on the horizon for the Indiana Pacers going into next year, in part because I just lived through this in Sacramento, but additionally, there's just such a mixed bag of people together that I don't know what the next step is going to look like for those Indiana Pacers. As for the Boston Celtics of it all, Boston versus Dallas is going to be an awesome finals. Boston running roughshod through the Eastern Conference, benefactors of everyone suffering from some sort of injury, was an incredibly fun and interesting way to watch this series go down. And Boston was, even if Boston was inevitably going to win the Eastern Conference, and they did it by only losing two games the entire way through, even if this was the outcome that most people foresaw, the way it got there was, I mean, think about it this way. Boston has been dogging it out in the Eastern Conference for 7 long years. And we talked about this a year ago in talking about why the Boston Celtics were not a failure despite the fact that they didn't get to the finals. Boston has reinvented themselves on 4 different occasions in the last 8 years and made it to an Eastern Conference finals every single time. Boston made the Eastern Conference Finals with Isaiah Thomas as the singularly great, amazing player during that 2017 season, and like Avery Bradley was his second best player. They made the Conference Finals with that team. Then they made the Conference Finals in 2020 by moving out Isaiah Thomas, moving out Kyrie Irving, moving out Gordon Hayward was still on the team at that point, but Gordon Hayward was no longer a central focus of the team. It was Jaylen Brown, Kemba Walker, young Jason Tatum finally gets to emerge as a number one, and Gordon Hayward was still there, Maka Smart was still there, and all that. Made it to a conference finals in the bubble. 2022, it becomes Tatum and Brown singular. We're going to move on from the Kemba Walkers. We're going to move on from the Gordon Haywards. We're going to move on. We're going to bring back the Al Horford. We're going to bring back. We're going to bring Grant Williams into the fold, and he's going to be a focal point. And we're going to trade for Derek White. And now it's Tatum and Brown's team instead of this collective group of Kemba and Tatum and Jaylen Brown making a run of the conference finals in the bubble. Now it's going to be Tatum and Brown, 2 singular focus points, great defense from Robert Williams and Marcus Smart, and shooting from the Derek Whites and the Horfords of the world, and boom, now we're going to the NBA Finals in 2022. A run to the NBA Finals in which Boston had to go through 7 games of Milwaukee, where Giannis was having one of the great playoff series of all time, and they still were able to get past the Bucks because Chris Middleton got hurt. 7 games of Miami, in which in the game 7, Miami stormed back from 13 points down with 3 minutes to play to almost win the game in the final minutes. They went 7 games in a barn burner of a series with Milwaukee. 7 games in a barn burner of a series against the Miami Heat before they were finally able to get to the finals, right? Isaiah Thomas got them to the conference finals. They couldn't get over the hump. The following year, it was Tatum and Rozier and a hodgepodge of guys who made it to the conference finals and almost took down the Cleveland Cavaliers, but LeBron James' singular greatness carried them to the finals, right? The first year they get there with Isaiah Thomas, the next year they lose Gordon Hayward and Kyrie Irving and still make it 7 games in the conference finals. And then they move on from the Kyrie experiment, and they move on from Terry Rozier, and now it's Tatum, Brown, Walker, Gordon Hayward, Marcus Smart, this is the team that is making a run to the conference finals, and they get smoked out by Miami, right? The Tatum block on Bam Adebayo, they lose in the conference finals. Still can't get over the hump. And in order to get to the finals, finally in 22, it took 7 games against Giannis, 7 games against the Miami Heat, like dogfights of series to finally get to the NBA finals. They had finally paid their dues. They finally got over the hump against great, great teams and great, great players that were the two defending conference champions. They had to beat the 2021 conference champion and the 2020 conference champion in back-to-back series to finally get through to the finals. And they blew it against the Warriors, battle-tested champions who stole a championship on their watch. And last year, they had to go through Philadelphia in 7 games. They had to go 7 games against Miami, and they ultimately they came back from down 0-3 against Miami. They went in, think about it this way, in going into this year's playoffs. This is a crazy thing I just realized right now. Going into this year's playoffs, Boston's last 6 playoff series went like this. Going into this year's postseason, their last 6 playoff series went 7 games against the defending NBA champion Milwaukee Bucks. 7 games against the 2020 Eastern Conference champion Miami Heat, who beat them in the conference finals. 6 games against the Warriors. 6 games against the Atlanta Hawks. 7 games against the Philadelphia 76ers, a series which they were down 3-2 and losing going into the fourth quarter of Game 6. 7 games against the 76ers. 7 games against the Miami Heat. That is every single series that they've played going at least 6 games for 6 consecutive playoff series. They played 40 playoff games between May 2022 and the start of this year, and the May of 2023. In a 12-month span, they played 40 playoff games against multiple MVPs, Giannis and Joel Embiid. The Miami Heat, in 2 different 7-game series, one that they won, one that they lost, they had to play the 3-time NBA champion Golden State Warriors, stealing a championship on their watch, 6 games worth of that series. Sure, they played the Hawks 6 games long, but the Hawks gave them a run for their money in a first-round series. Like, Boston had played so many playoff games for so many years. They deserved a goddamn break. They played half a season's worth of playoff games in a 12-month span. From the second round of the 2022 playoffs until the conference finals of 2023, Boston played 40 fucking playoff games. They had to work and work and work for 4 different versions of that team, 7 years, always coming up short in the conference finals. The one year that they had to go 7 games against 2 conference champions to finally make it through the absolute tire fire of an Eastern Conference. They finally get through and they lose to the Warriors in the finals, right? This previous generation, it was battling Giannis. It was battling Embiid. It was battling Jimmy Butler and the Miami Heat year after year after year. And the question marks about Jason Tatum came up from the fact that Tatum was not as singularly great as those players. And we kept saying for all of these playoff runs, Tatum is younger than all of these guys. Tatum is not yet in his prime. He's just been around for so long that Tatum and the Celtics eventually will get past these teams and buffer the next generation. And that literally happened this year, because you saw in real time Milwaukee fall apart, Miami fall apart, Philadelphia fall apart. Boston was left as the king of the mountain. And maybe this Boston team would have beaten all of those teams if healthy, right? Maybe Boston still would have conquered the mountain and put those teams out to pasture. But instead, every single one of them physically fell apart before they could ever get a puncher's chance at Boston, right? Boston retooled, got Drew Holiday, got Porzingis. Derek White made this developmental leap in his third year with the team, right? They were finally there, right? Tatum's not an MVP caliber player, but Tatum doesn't need to be an MVP caliber player because all of the other MVP players are in the Western Conference, right? It's Jokic, it's Luka, it's Shai Gilgeous-Alexander. Brunson finished ahead of him on the MVP voting, but if you had a question between whether Brunson or Tatum was a better player, well, you would say maybe it's Brunson, maybe it's Tatum, but if you asked who's better, the Celtics or the Knicks, most people would say the Celtics, because the Celtics have this incredible depth of players around a player who's in that second tier, right? Tatum's that second tier of star, and it's been proven time and time again because the Celtics always lose when they get that deep in the playoffs. Sometimes it's because Tatum, and by the way, you know what 40 playoff games in 12 months will do to you? Shoulder injuries for Tatum in the finals against the Warriors. Rolls his ankle in Game 7 of the Eastern Conference Finals against the Miami Heat, right? It's you play these grinding 40 playoff games in 13 months, and eventually it's going to physically fall apart on you, and ultimately it's so interesting to watch in real time as now Boston gets a 12-2 run through the Eastern Conference. No test along the way at all. And people want to go out and discredit Boston, but ultimately Boston's been this dominant all season, and the result was reflective of what's changed in the NBA landscape, and that is Miami, Philadelphia, and Milwaukee are champions no more. I mean, Philadelphia was never a champion, but they had Joel Embiid, and so they should have fallen ass backwards into a conference championship at some point along the way, which brings us back to the Trae Young conversation we were just having about 2021. Just how stupidly crazy that upset was, right? The power balance shifted back from east to west. All the stars are in the west. The west is this gauntlet of teams duking it out, and Boston gets a run to the finals that establishes them as dominant champion team. And they've earned it. They've earned it. They've earned an easy run through the playoffs. They've earned they made the risky decision to blow the whole thing up, right? We talked about this back in March, right? I don't know if I would have had the gall to get rid of four of the eight core players who took you to an NBA championship, right? They ultimately traded out Grant Williams, Marcus Smart, as we like to call them. They traded out Grant Williams, Marcus Smart, Robert Williams, Malcolm Brogdon in exchange for, and a lottery pick, in exchange for Drew Holiday, Kristaps Porzingis. Right? I don't know if I would have had the gall to be able to pull that one off, because they got rid of all these core players from a championship run, from 40 playoff games in 13 months, right? This was the team that was supposed to get through, and ultimately, they deserve to be rewarded for making that decision. And they're getting that reward because the Eastern Conference fell apart around them, but they had the foresight to make those trades and ultimately withstand all the injuries around them because they were so dominant in the regular season that they could rest players in the back half of the season. And then they have so much depth of stars that Porzingis can go out early in the playoffs and it doesn't even matter. They're still going to make a run to the finals. This is Boston's reward for 8 years of pivots, retooling, rebounding. Maybe it's less honorable that they didn't have to go through Giannis or Miami or Philadelphia to get there. But ultimately, I think they are rewarded for years of patience, right? Like they've had the duels for years. One time they got them, right? They got Milwaukee and Miami in 2021. They got Philadelphia every time they played them. But ultimately, they were always in contention despite the fact that they never had a generational star. But they had this depth, this defensive firepower in 2022. They were always right there, always competing, always putting their second-tier star in a position to succeed with an incredibly deep team. And ultimately, they now get rewarded, not by having to finally conquer those teams again. They already did that in 2022. They don't have to conquer the Eastern Conference. They just had to wait for Tatum's time to come. Where Giannis physically fell apart, Jimmy Butler physically fell apart. Embiid fell apart. And finally, for once, after 8 years of chomping at the LeBron bit, after chopping at the Miami Heat bit, after chopping at the Giannis and Milwaukee bit, for years of fighting these teams, finally, Boston was rewarded with an easy run of the playoffs. And what they did is pull off one of the most historic runs to the finals in the history of the sport. I believe only 5 teams ever have made it to the finals with a 12-2 or better record. And yes, they had to play easy teams to get through it. And yes, they tried to fuck it up a couple of times along the way. But Boston finally gets rewarded for years of chomping at the bit, trying to take down the best conference in the NBA and the best players in the NBA. And finally, at the end of the day, they get rewarded by the rest of those guys falling by the wayside and them being there to have a historic run to the playoffs, or historic run to the finals, 8 years in the making. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for stopping in here to the Take It Easy podcast here on the Bleav Podcast Network. We got episodes every Monday, Wednesday, and Thursday, including some Wired Ups. We're also going to have post-game shows following most of these NBA final games coming up in the next week or so. Wednesday, we're going to break down the Western Conference Finals. If we have a finals matchup by then, we'll talk about the finals preview on Thursday. We'll talk to you in a couple of days, and in the meantime, take it easy.